Bible, if you would, and turn to Ecclesiastes 12. We'll begin there in just a moment, Ecclesiastes chapter 12. I want to say a word of thanks to you for the work you put in inviting people to this meeting. I want to say a word of thanks for your inviting me to come and be a part of it. You know, I don't come to Kimberly with the idea in mind, boy, y'all sure are lucky you invited me here this week. Y'all wouldn't know what to do if I didn't come and tell you. You have a lot of good folks here and mature Christians. And I don't know any place, in fact, that I would say that about. They're lucky to have me come by. They need me to know what to do. But I'm thankful to have the opportunity to share with you in this work, even if it's for a brief time. It's always a pleasure for me. And I hope that in talking about some of these fundamental issues that we plan to talk about this week, that we can be a help, an encouragement, a reminder. This afternoon, I want to share a lesson with you on the home, and particularly a lesson that relates to parenting. And so I trust that you'll find some value in that. And also, I think Monday night, if we don't change our mind, I want to think with you about a very fundamental lesson dealing with the existence of God. You know, atheism is cool today. It's remarkable how many people, how many young people, have been caught into this sort of pseudo-intellectual trap that says that, we need to just move past this idea of God and the exciting new world of atheism. The truth is, atheism is just an indefensible philosophy. It never has made sense. It doesn't make any more sense now than it ever did. So I'd like to think with you about that briefly Monday night and to talk about one particular argument, if we might call it that, for the existence of God, and that is the existence of morality, the fact of morality. And so we'd be glad to have you come then. Tuesday night, I want to share another fundamental lesson with you, and this will be on the subject of baptism. You know, it used to be I would go and preach a meeting, and I would not maybe even mention more than just in passing first principles, because I was talking to a building full of Christians and I thought that maybe that wasn't really needed or necessary. I have changed my thinking about that. And I have decided that it was a mistake on my part to make too many assumptions. I have every confidence in the Bible knowledge of this audience, and I don't mean to suggest otherwise, but it's just good for us to think about those subjects. So we'll plan Tuesday night to spend some time with that. If you have somebody particularly you think that might be of use to or for, I'd be glad to have them come and be with us then as well. So we'll leave it there for now. Ecclesiastes 12, and in verse 1, these familiar words: "Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. While the sun, or the light, or the moon, or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain. In the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, and the strong men shall bow themselves, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look out of the windows be darkened, the doors shall be shut in the streets when the sound of the grinding is low, and he shall rise up at the door at the voice of the bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low. Also when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and fears shall be in the way, the almond tree shall flourish, and the grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail, because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets, or ever the silver cord be loosed, or the golden bowl be broken, or or the pitcher be broken at the cistern, or fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern, then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return to God who gave it. Vanity of vanity, saith the preacher, all is vanity. We got any old folks here today? That's a rude question. Why is that a rude question? That's my next question. Why? When did old become a pejorative? We gotta have a euphemism for it. We don't talk about old people anymore. We talk about seniors. That sounds better, doesn't it? I don't like that either, though. Somebody says I don't. Why? What is the matter with that? None of us here is deceived by the fact. The world is not deceived by the fact that people get older. So what's wrong with that? The very fact that is an insult to call somebody old. It's about like calling somebody dishonest. You know, why is that so? It reflects certainly an unbiblical view of age. I want to think with you just a few minutes about some thoughts that the Bible reminds us of concerning old age. So for those who are old, it's good for us. And those of us who might get old, it's useful to us. And those of us now who deal with those who are older, it's good for us. Let me think with you for a few minutes about that subject this morning. This passage, certainly, I think, is a reminder of the fact of age. A time in life when your hair gets white and your body doesn't work like it used to. And one of the facts that the Bible teaches about age is that it comes with the challenge of limitation and of pain. There are problems in old age that can become dangerous to us. And this passage enumerates some of those, doesn't it? In the symbolic language here, it pictures for us a time when our teeth don't work like they used to, and our eyes don't work like they used to, and our back doesn't seem to work like it used to, and we can't sleep like we used to. You may have heard that old saying. Somebody said that an all-nighter, to a young person, pulling an all-nighter means that they went all night without sleeping. And to an older person, pulling an all-nighter means that they went all night without waking up. And that is one difference. There are things that we used to take for granted that now we don't have anymore. And I think sometimes for those who are younger in particular, it is easy to forget that. But for younger people and for most people who have reasonably good health, you know, we drive up to the building, we hop out of the car, we sit down there in the pew or in the chair or whatever it might be, and just the next thing. But for some people, it is a real chore. It's a chore to move anywhere, to get anywhere. I used to go pick up a fellow that worshiped with us at North Bibb. Brother Hickam was 93 years old. And I'd pick him up at his house, and we'd go to the service. And I made a mistake a time or two. I would say, Brother Hickam, you feeling good? He'd say, you're 93, you never feel good. I'm doing the best I can. All right, I'll ask that differently next time. You know, I'm sure he was right about that. I've never been 93. I don't really expect to be 93. But if I get there, I just am confident he's right about that. You never feel good. I tell you something I have observed in folks that I love who are older even than I am. And that is that the secret about old age is its pain management. That's a lot of it. There are exceptions to that. There are young people who have bad health, and there are older people who have remarkably good health. But on average, the older we get, the longer we live, the more things hurt that are not going to get fixed. You know, if my knee hurts, I'm going to go to the doctor and say, fix this. But you get to a point in life where there's no fixing it. You might try to mask the pain with this medicine or that medicine, but how much medicine do I want to take? And so there you are, and you got this balance. How much pain can I live with? This is the secret, isn't it? pain management. 20-year-old fellow on average doesn't have to deal with that, or a 30-year-old. But if I live long enough, I most certainly will. So you're going to have to be tough. And you're going to have some grit about you. And it's a marvel to me to see people who are willing to pay that price and to handle life with such grace. I went to preach at a place one time, and Brother Bragwell may have been there at different times. But I thought I was in trouble. I came in, and they had a long building. And in the back of the building, they had two recliners. Oh, my word. I said, man alive, it's hard enough people stay awake when I preach. Don't put them in a recliner. This is not going to be good. But a fellow told me, he said, no, don't worry about that. He said, you got to be 100 years old to sit in those chairs. They had two brethren there who were 100. And Sunday morning, they were both filled. I was preaching at another place one time, and there was a brother, I'm sure you'd know his name, passed away just in the last couple of years. But he was 99 years old. He wasn't 100. He was 99. Never missed a service. He'd come every time. People like that don't realize how valuable their example is. They don't understand when you see people who overcome whatever physical troubles they have and they come and they're there and they sit through a service and they're hurt and they can't hear very well. And sometimes they have trouble, you know, staying awake. They have to really fight that. And it'd be so easy just to say, what's the use? Well, what the use is that it's an opportunity to honor God. And to show an example to those who are younger about how much this means. I was in Virginia one time, one of those older couples. The woman, she had lost both of her legs to diabetes, and the man, he couldn't see. So they had to get a ride. You know, it's not fun to get a ride, is it? I would 100% rather give somebody a ride than have to ask for a ride. I'm sure all of us feel that way. But these folks, it had been so easy not to come. They were there every night. They had to get a ride. They had to come, get in and out of the building, do all the things. But I told them, I said, you guys preached a lot better sermon this week than I did. Every night, just by being here. But that's what it's going to take, because there are challenges that come with pain and limitation. And that leads to another point that we have in this passage that we already mentioned to some extent. They shall be afraid, verse 5, of that which is high. Fears shall be in the way. The grasshopper is a burden. Everything's a burden. And timidity is a danger. As we get older and maybe more frail, the tendency is, well, I don't know if I'm old. Well, I mean, we'd go to the grocery store. We'd go to see the grandkids if it was raining. But I don't know. Well, I don't feel good. There was an older lady that I met up north, and she always used to say, I'd rather go to church and feel bad than I would sit at home and feel good. That was her attitude. God bless her for that. But that timidity can take hold of us, and it can cause us to just sort of, not just in terms of our behavior, but even in terms of our view and our tolerance of things. You've all seen the little at the craft store, Grandma's paddle. You've seen that. It's a stick with a pillow at the end of it. That's Grandma's paddle. It's a stereotypical idea that, you know, who are these people that are so tolerant of kids? My children, you know, they weren't tolerant with me. That's what the parents say, you know. Well, understand, I know and you know that grandparents are not given the primary job to discipline. And grandparents can have the wisdom to really help parents to discipline their children. But having said that, there's a difference in letting little ones get another cookie and excusing sin. Have you ever seen an older person who should have known better? who would excuse sinful behavior in younger people and their grandchildren, praise them for doing the wrong thing, congratulate them for doing something that God says sent them to hell? What's wrong? We've lost something along the way. An older man that I appreciated so very much told me years ago when I first started trying to preach, he'd say, "Wesley, you're going to have to be careful because when preachers get old, they get soft." Well, I know some exceptions to that, and you do too. And this fellow that told me was an exception to that, I think. I didn't ever notice him being soft. But what he was saying was he was making a point. And he was saying that the danger for the young man is to spout off when he really doesn't know what he's talking about and to be too quick to speak. That'll be his danger. And the danger for the older fella will be to be settled in and to say, "Hey, look, you know, I got things set up here and I don't want to be rocking this boat. There may not be another boat come along. I think I'll just..." And then he's not speaking on things he ought to say and he knows he ought to say them. There's a danger there. There's a danger for all of us, not just preachers, to be silent when we know we ought to speak. That's what we're talking about. That timidity can take hold of us. It can cause us to really lose our allegiance to God. There's also another aspect, a danger that this chapter mentions, I think, and that's a bitter spirit, if you will. "The years shall come when I have, say, I have no pleasure in them. Desire shall fail." Vanity of vanities, that's the way we see things. We become sour on life. And as we get older, we become more and more embittered. I may have shared this story with some of you before about a man I met up in West Virginia many years ago. His first name was Lawrence. And Mr. Lawrence, it was hell with him. He was a bachelor. He had lost his wife, as I recall. You know, he was able to get around. He seemed to be in reasonable health. But when you went to see him, it was obvious that the whole time you were there, it was just a diatribe about everything that had been done wrong to him and all the problems and all the bad things and the bad breaks he had had. He was just consumed with that. And you could tell that the reason why all that came tumbling out when everybody came to visit him was because that's what he thought about when nobody was there. That's all he thought about. And he had become embittered by that. And it bothered me. And I didn't know what to do about it. I didn't know how to help him. Because I really felt like this was a problem. I don't know if folks like that are going to make it. We're so bitter about life. You know, we're not fit for heaven with that mindset. But I didn't know what to do. So an older brother, wiser than I was, went with me one time. And we got in there, and again, Mr. Lawrence, he had just started into this, what he always did, you know. This older brother who was with me that day, he interrupted him. In the middle of a sentence, he said, "I'm okay." I got, "What? I'm okay. I just thought I'd tell you. You didn't ask me. I'm okay. My wife's been sick, but she's better." It stung him, you know. He just sort of... He hadn't even thought about that. Asking about somebody else just hadn't crossed his mind. So if you could tell it made an impact, I would never have thought to have done that. And I did notice that the next time I went, the first question he asked was, "How are you?" He might have gone back into the same old, but at least he did. It made that much of a difference. The ability to think about somebody else, to get out of ourselves, to not feel sorry for ourselves, to not become embittered. It's a challenge because old age brings limitation and it brings problems and we can't give in to those things. But old age is not just about problems and troubles and dreary things, is it? If you read the scripture, you know, and I know, that old age brings a lot of blessings and privileges. One of the privileges of old age, I'm turning over to the 37th Psalm. One of the privileges of old age involves the privilege of being a living witness of the providence of God. I started to say Psalm 37 is a great psalm. I don't know what psalm would not be a great psalm, reckon. What would I put on that list? But it is a great psalm. A memorable psalm about having the right perspective, and not one of those psalms that teaches us not to envy the world. But David in this passage makes the point, I have been young, verse 25, and now am old, and I have not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his descendants begging bread. He is ever merciful and lends, and his descendants are blessed. He talks later on in the chapter about, or in the psalm, about having seen the wicked spreading himself like a great bay tree and yet passing away and being no more. I've seen it. I've been young and now I'm old, and let me tell you what I've seen. There's a great value, it seems to me, in living a while and witnessing the providence of God. I heard Lynn Hedrick many years ago preach a sermon from 2 Corinthians 9. You know, Paul in that passage commends to us giving bountifully, not grudgingly, generously. He makes a promise there. And Brother Hedrick read from this passage, God is able, verse 8, to make all grace abound towards you, that you always having all sufficiency in all things might have an abundance for every good work. The promise is not you give God a dollar, he'll give you 20. That's not, but the idea is God is not going to allow you to be without by doing the right thing. That God, his providence, will bless those who are blessing to others, and all of that activity bringing a blessing to the name of God. God's providence is a marvelous thing. He who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food, supply and multiply the seed you have sown and increase the fruit of your righteousness. I remember Brother Hedrick talking about that passage, and he talked about his own experience. He said, you know, when he and his wife married, like a lot of young married couples, they didn't have a big income, but they had decided they were going to be generous with their giving. They were going to give a generous percentage, what they thought was a generous percentage. And they said they committed to that, and they stuck with that through the years. They said now there were times when it was tight, and it just looked like they didn't know where it was going to come from, but somehow, some way, they'd get by. And Brother Henry got up there and he said, I'm here to tell you, this works. And it meant a lot to me because the Holy Spirit wrote it. And it meant something to me that a man would stand up and say, I have lived it. It's a great thing when you can, after a life of devotion to God, say, it's worth it. It works. What a blessing that is. And how sad it is that there are some who live a long time and are witness to nothing, because they have seen nothing. They've observed nothing. They haven't thought about it. That's a tragedy. But it's a privilege of old age to be able to stand as a witness. You have to live a while. Something else that I think is a privilege of old age is the wisdom and knowledge that comes with old age, or should. In Hebrews chapter 5, that familiar passage, when for the time you ought to be teachers, you have need that one teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of God, and are become such as have need of milk and not strong meat. Everyone that uses milk is unskillful in the word of righteousness. He is a babe. But strong meat belongs to them who are full age, who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern good and evil. What he's saying, obviously, is that there should be a connection between time and knowledge. There is a place in the kingdom for everybody. For somebody who's young, for somebody who knows little about the Bible, they know just enough to obey God, to become his child. They have all this to learn. They've been a Christian for a few months. There's room in the kingdom for them. And I don't want to say anything now that would suggest I don't think they're important. They're very important. But there is a need for people who have lived the time and used the time and invested the time, and they have the knowledge. That's where we're looking for the leaders. But you know, You have to put the time to good use to be valuable. Here's a person and they've sat for years on the pew and they've heard how many sermons? How many times have they read through the Bible? How many classes have they taught? The knowledge that they've gained, that's why the Lord's looking for older people to be leaders. But if we don't put it to use, then we won't know that joy and we won't be able to be that kind of blessing. I'll share this with some reservation because I don't want this to be misunderstood. I remember being in the company of an older preacher one time, and there was a man who came up and he had a question. We say that there are no dumb questions, and I believe that. I don't care who you are or where you are. If we don't know, we need to learn. We don't need to be ashamed. We need to go ahead and find out. So understand, I believe that. I've been on that side of it. I understand. I need to know. Even if I don't know, I should know. I need to know. But anyway, this wasn't that young. He was probably in his 40s. He'd been been a member of the church in a particular place for 20 years, more than that. He had a question. What's your question? He said, what's the difference between an elder and a deacon? Is there any difference? What's the difference between an elder and a deacon? Is there any difference? Been sitting in the pew for 20 years. That was his question. At an age when he really should have been qualified to be a deacon and maybe looking to the eldership. But if your knowledge is that infantile, you're not going to be able. We need people who can answer hard questions and give advice in difficult times, who can draw on their experience and their knowledge. And that's why we've got to be using our time. But having said that, it's one of the privileges of old age to be a leader and to be a voice of reason in difficult times. Age brings respect. It should bring respect. There's a passage over in Leviticus 19. I love this expression from Moses' law. Thou shalt rise up before the hoary head and honor the face of the old man and fear the Lord thy God. I am the Lord. Rise up before the hoary head and honor the face of the old man. Let me tell you, if there's an older lady trying to find a place to sit down, and I used to say, and my kids are occupying chairs and oblivious, that's my fault. Something's wrong with this picture. That's not just an Old Testament precept. In the New Testament, in 1 Timothy chapter 5, Paul made a point somewhat like that. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 1, this is the New King James. Do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father, and younger men as brothers, and older women as mothers. There's a way that you talk to an older man, and there's a way you don't talk to it. You talk to an older man like he's your father and an older woman like she's your mother. Even if she's wrong, you don't talk to her like you're commanding a stray dog to leave the yard. That lesson is a New Testament precept as well as an Old Testament. And I've thought through the years, I think there are other societies that do a better job of teaching respect for age than we do in this country. Again, some of you may have heard me tell this story, forgive me, but there's a story that I heard Carl Dieselkamp tell years ago that really impressed me. My association with Brother Dieselkamp was very short, but I enjoyed the time that I got to spend with him. I knew of him. I knew he and his family had spent a lot of time working over in West Africa, and he told me about an occasion years ago when he was out in the rural area there, in Nigeria, I think it was. And out of his village and just sort of standing, and everybody was sitting in the round there, and he was teaching, and then he was answering questions. And there was a young man over here, and he had a question. So the young man asked, and he tried to answer the young man's question. Then he had another question, so he answered the young man's question. He had a third question, and that's when he told the young man, he said, "Now, I'm going to answer this question, but I'm going to go then get somebody else's question." So he answered the young man's question. He had another question. And Brother Dieskamp was about to deal with that, and he noticed over here was an older man sitting. And he got up, and he made his way over here where that young man was, just slapped him in the face, just slapped the nonsense out of him, and said, "You have shamed us." And Brother Dieskamp, rather wide-eyed, looked at this, and he said that the young man, he sort of bristled, but he just took it. And so he was talking after the thing was over with some people, and he said, "You know, I didn't know what he would do. I thought he might get up and strike back." And they said, "Oh, he would never do that. You just do not hit an older man." Well, you know, they've learned a lesson somewhere along the line. There was an occasion when he told me another story about he and his father, Leslie Dieskamp, who was living at the time, obviously, and he was going with him to Africa, and they got over there in customs, and Brother Dieskamp had his bag checked. This had been years ago, before some of the terrorists, and then Brother Dieskamp, his father, Leslie Dieskamp, came along, and he said, "Well, this is my father." "Oh, this is your father. Oh, it is his very father. Come on through. It's his very father." You know, respect for age. Let that be our desire, our purpose, to teach our children respect for age. It's something that ought to come. Age brings the joy of family as well. There's something wonderful about, well, what does the wise man say? Children's children are a crown to the aged. What a blessing children are. Children's children. You have to live a while to have that blessing. We've been blessed to have children. We've been blessed to see our children baptized. I don't have any grandchildren yet. It bothers me terribly. But you know, I'm looking forward to the day that I might see a grandchild. But then to see a grandchild baptized. You got to live a while to know that joy. What a blessing that is. I think every day that we live on this earth brings a blessing, because we're that much closer to home, aren't we? It is what Paul wrote about, I think, in Romans 13 and verse 11. He said, "In that, knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than when we believe." And every day we live, we wake up and we say, "I'm one day closer to where I want to be." There are a lot of blessings that come with old age, but there is also responsibility. I appreciate the kind way you've listened. But let me, in closing, say that age brings responsibility. There is that retirement mentality that we at least have heard of. I'm not sure if anybody retires anymore, do they? There was a time when people retired. There was a time when people, and maybe some still do, they had the kind of job that they'd work until they were a certain age, and then they would say, "Well, now I'm going to take my retirement income and live." Most folks that I know plan to work if they live to be 150. They're going to work every day just trying to get by. But this idea that we'll retire and then we'll spend our time doing for ourselves, and we're going to travel, or we're going to do this or that, I think older people who maybe are not so busy now rearing their children, and perhaps they're not working as many hours as they used to, have an opportunity not just to serve themselves, but to serve the kingdom, and to take the talents and the gifts that they've been given and put that to use. It's a two-way street, isn't it? What we need are young people who are willing to be taught, willing to listen, who understand the importance of that experience. There are older people who'd be willing to teach, but who will listen? That's an important question. But the other question is, who is willing to take all the years, the last years that they have, and put that to God's service. I'm turning over to Psalm 71. And I'm reading something that the psalmist wrote in verses 17 and 18. O God, thou hast taught me from my youth, and hitherto have I declared thy wondrous works, and now when I am old and gray-headed, O Lord, forsake me not. Forsake me not until I have showed thy strength to this generation and thy power to everyone that is to come. You know, older people are not taught of the New Testament. This is the time that you can just sit by and watch others do it. Aged men are taught to be examples, and aged women are taught to be examples and teachers. May the Lord help us to take that responsibility seriously. So, get out your songbooks, if you will, and turn to the number that's been selected. And as you do, let me ask you a question. What shall we say about old age from the Bible? Is it a curse or is it a blessing? Is it a time of weakening or a time of strengthening? Is it a time of discouragement or a time of reward? The truth is, it's what you make of it, and I make of it. And if we start early and use ourselves and spend ourselves in His service, it can be a blessing to us and a blessing to others. Proverbs 16 and verse 31. The gray head is a crown of glory if it be seen in the way of right. And that's right. If you're here today and you're not a child of God, why not today come to Jesus, confess His name, come in repentance, be baptized into Christ, be raised to walk in newness of life. Why not today? If you're here as a child of God, if there's something, anything that stands in the way between you and your Lord, why not today make that right with Him? If we can help you, we stand ready to, while we stand, and while Brother Creel leads us, will you come?